Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Advisor. My name is Lisa Urbanski. I co-host the show. And today, our guest is Mr. George Haymaker. George and I have a little plan for you guys today. And first, I'll introduce him to you. So, he is a former entrepreneur who faced some of life's most difficult, challenging times, going through addiction, alcoholism, anxiety, low self-esteem, and a mind that was often his worst enemy. He became a brain science educator and coach and completely changed his life around and is now helping other people do the same thing. What this means is he helps people understand how their brain works, how they can change, and then use the change to better manage their lives. And before we get started, thank you to Spreaker and iHeartRadio. I just want to give you guys a quick shout out because without you, this would not be possible. And I also want to say thank you to our audience. Please do not forget to like and subscribe before the episode ends. So, as I was saying, George and I have a little plan for you guys. So, we thought it would be fun to, do a real life example of what he does and how he works with his clients. And I mean, who better than me to agree to do that? So there's a lot of topics that a lot of you can relate to. And one of those things, and what I struggle with, which George is aware of, and I've presented to him, is perfectionism. And so George is going to walk me through his process, and we're going to see if we can he can help me, pinpoint some issues and help you guys along the way. So, George, what did I agree to here? What am I getting myself into?
We're gonna see. But yeah, you're gonna be our real life guinea pig today. But thank you so much for doing this, Lisa. I think it'll be fun because, not sure that everybody understands, what coaching's all about, and especially my particular approach to coaching, which is oriented around brain science. So it'll be fun, and hopefully we'll all get something out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming back. It is good to see you again. And I mean, I'm ready for it. And I think that if we can, even help one or two people out there, our mission is accomplished. So let's get to work.
All right. So first of all, Lisa, thanks so much for joining me today. I'm real excited to meet you and see you and do a little work together. So this will be fun, okay? Now these coaching sessions are environments that are safe and confidential, and I abide by the ICF Code of Standards. Do you have any questions about that?
So, what is the ICF's code of standards?
Well, it's the International Coaching Federation. It's an international body that regulates and creates structure and rules and regulations around conduct for coaches. And so it basically means that I just abide by all their rules and regulations, which are significant, and you can visit their website and check them out. But it just helps really put a structure around how coaches conduct themselves and make sure that it's client oriented.
Amazing. And just to be clear, everything you and I are talking about, nobody else is going to know, right? Your confidentiality is here.
Fully, 100%. Except
Perfect.
for the listeners, I think they're going to know about
Yeah, I'm
it.
just playing along. For
Okay,
sure,
all
for
right.
sure.
Other than
Awesome.
all your
Yeah.
listeners, no one will know about it.
Right.
All right.
Perfect.
So,
I agree. I'm ready.
excellent. So, again, thank you for joining me. And so, how would you like to use our time together? I know you talked about perfectionism. And I think from previous conversations, you discussed having looked into it a little bit with some other professionals to help you understand it. But for my benefit, I just would like to know how long you've been struggling with this pattern and where you think it originates.
I mean, from a very young age, I grew up in a family of really hard workers. Working hard was priority, and they, we there was nothing given to me. Like, so I had to work for everything I had, but I was pushed to do really well. So school was important. So I was pushed to get really good grades. And I had a brother that was just a little bit smarter than me. So he would do A plus and I would get the A's or whatever. And it just was like he did better. And then there was me doing just a little less than that. And it would never felt good enough. Like I always felt like I was being pushed to the next level. So it was like from a very young age, always just pushed to do well.
Okay. And so at this young age, what type of emotions, thoughts, and behaviors were you developing? Did you present as a result of this need you had?
Yeah, so I guess I would fear if I didn't perform. So I'd be scared if I didn't do well. So I'd always be functioning from a place of, fight or flight. Like I need to do well. Like this isn't, even if I didn't enjoy it, I have to do my best. Otherwise, it's not gonna be good enough. Or so that I guess out of fear.
Okay, so do I understand that you may have felt under threat? And in order to feel safe, you needed to perform.
That and to get like the validation and recognition because I mean I've this older brother who's killing it and getting all these like straight A's and I'm supposed to live up to that, right? So it's like, how am I going to stand out? I want to be recognized. I want to do well.
Right, yeah, makes sense. And so this started at a young age, as far back as you can remember, I guess.
Yeah,
Okay.
1,000%.
And this has stayed with you through the years, this pattern?
Yeah, I'm definitely an overperformer, overachiever, always striving to do better in everything I do. I definitely got a little better grasp on it, but it still definitely creeps in. And yeah, it's definitely still here.
Okay. And so when it does surface, albeit not as frequently as maybe it once did, what are the thoughts and emotions and actions that come up for you today when it presents itself, and how would you describe them as problematic?
Yeah, the good, great question. So I think again, it's the fear, and perhaps it's the thought of getting something taken away, or when you're in a job and you think you're gonna get fired. Like there's that I always think that the consequence is going to be a lot worse than what it probably will. So I don't know what that a term for that would be, but like just fearing the ultimate worst when really it probably won't be that bad.
Okay, and when you are experiencing this fear of something being taken away, what is it that you think might be taken away?
Yeah, I guess opportunities, or if I don't say yes to everything, if I don't perform in anything, then I won't be given opportunity. Or I'll miss out on something, or this idea that if I don't show up, the house is going to burn down. Lots of pressure, I guess.
Okay. And so it would it be threatening your way of life or your the significance that you feel about yourself? I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just trying to grasp it. How you might be threatened by or
Yeah,
feel threatened.
I honestly think it's like that threaten of like being looked at as less than, not as smart, and then losing of being like, I don't want to work with you anymore, or someone, a relationship ending, perhaps, right? Like just there being a really bad consequence, an extreme consequence.
Okay. So if you were to try to label this pattern in two or three words and call it something, like give it a name, for this particular pattern, what words do you think you'd attach to it?
That's That's just like it makes me think of like being super tired. So like a cycle of I don't know, that's a tough one. Put it in a sentence, the cycle. So I mean it's like getting a task, feeling that I have to crush it, do overperform, and then being exhausted. So it's like that's kind of how I can put it into words, I guess.
Okay. So can I give you an example of kind of what I'm hearing and you tell me if I'm hitting it or maybe you could tweak it a little bit so we could put a name on it, just like Lisa's your name, George is my name. Sometimes it helps us to put names on things to help it because the patterns can feel so a part of us and so overwhelming because they're made up of thoughts and emotions and actions and they're all kind of woven together. And as you know, they just become very burdensome, and it's hard to get an objective space between us and them to be able to analyze them more objectively. So that's why we put names on things to create some separation. So I'm going to just throw something out there, and you tell me if it fits or if you'd like to tweak it, okay? Because it needs to be yours in order for it to work. So how about the hypervigilant achiever?
Sure, that works for me. I had a different one in mind, but I can't say that on the show, so I'll go with yours.
Okay. So it's this need to achieve, or another word I heard you use was overperform. So you could maybe throw that in instead, or and do you think hypervit?
Over performance queen or something. I don't know.
Okay. Would you say you're hypervigilant about it, or
Define hypervigilant for me. Like I do it all the time. Is
Yeah.
that what
So
you,
you,
no.
yeah.
No, perhaps not all the time. The pressure is on me all the time. So the feeling of the need to be is there and has never left. I've just got better at kind of saying, nope, like you're good, like what you're doing is good enough, but I don't ever believe it. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so maybe something like the pressured overperformer.
Yes, there we go.
Is that one okay? All
Sure.
right. So this is kind of a pattern called the pressured overperformer that you've developed over a lifetime that represents something that you needed to do early on in life to meet your needs of significance, safety, stability, so on and so forth. Or is that fair?
That is 100% accurate.
Okay. So would it be okay if with you if I interjected a concept here, a brain science concept, psychology concept, for us to consider so that we can continue to build on where we're headed with this?
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome.
Okay. So this is for you and for the audience. All of us as human beings have six core psychological needs. All of us have them. We just have them in different degrees. So some of these needs may be more important to you than they are to me. Some other ones may be more important to me than they are to you. And so the six needs are the core needs are all the same. We all have them. We just have them in different amounts. Okay. And those are autonomy, significance, stability, equality, togetherness, and skillfulness. And so, our entire lives, starting from the time that we're born, we're all trying to satisfy these needs in one way or another throughout our lives. That's really what our lives are about, is trying to satisfy these core psychological needs. So, my question to you, based on what you've just outlined for us, this pattern, the pressured overperformer, and all that that entails, is which of these six needs, and I'll repeat them again for you, do you think you were trying to meet, or you are trying to meet, or when you established this pattern, which ones do you think you were trying to meet? And again, significance, which is, the need to feel important and valid. Skillfulness, the need to feel adept. Equality, the need to be treated fairly and feel like you had an even chance. Togetherness, the need to feel connected. Let's see, which ones did I leave out? Did I say autonomy? The need to feel like you're in control of your destiny. Any stability, the need to feel safe and protected.
I think there's a bit of all of them in there for sure. Yeah, because not feeling like, feeling like I have to do something in order to get that when it's just a basic need, right? So I think all of them in some aspects for sure.
Any in particular that really stand out that may be more predominant than others?
Probably, like, I know we talked a little bit before we started recording. Before, when it was a big issue, it was to feel worth, that worth, like I was worth something, to feel like I was part of something. So I would say that one, which one is that?
That would be significance.
Yeah, exactly. So that would have been the driving factor for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. So are you saying then that you learned how to satisfy this need for significance, by developing this pattern, early in your life?
Yes.
Okay, and were you successful at it? Do you think that you were able to somehow meet this need by overperforming, overworking, just relentless pursuit of proving that you were valid?
No. No, because that's the thing, right? With perfectionism, it's like, so I hit these milestones that I work towards, and then I get there and I have an F yeah moment and I'm excited. And then I'm like, okay, now what? Like, it's like the celebration, there's no celebration and it's still not good enough. And then I'm like, why isn't this good enough? Right. So that's the internal in my mind. So, yeah, no, it's never satisfied, perhaps, or it's
Okay.
never been satisfied. Yeah.
But the pattern was developed to try to meet that need, and
Oh, yeah.
it could be met briefly, and then you would find that the need was still there, and so you would pursue to try to satisfy it again.
Right. So I
So
got really, really good at that pattern. Yeah.
got it. So if you think of just a child at the early parts of their life, what do you think that they're wired to seek and need?
Their parents' attention.
Okay.
Right?
To feel what?
Loved and valued, mostly loved as a kid, little baby, right?
Yep.
Safe,
Safe, yep. Protected.
secure, protected. Yeah.
Okay. And so if you weren't getting all of what you needed in those areas, does it make sense to you then why you created this pattern in order to try and achieve the gaps that you weren't getting?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So at this point, it's really good for us to understand again the source of where it originated and why, so that, and now we've got a name for it, so that we can kind of just look at it objectively and say, okay, now it makes sense as to why this happened.
Okay.
Great. So in your life, how many times do you think that this pattern has surfaced in one way or another and come forward into your mind in one form or another, and you've had to, reckon with it mentally?
God, I can't even count. Way too many. A lot.
So thousands, maybe. if not.
More than, yeah, hundreds of thousands of times, perhaps. I'm 40, so I don't know. Average, it was a lot when I was younger, so a lot, yeah, definitely thousands.
Okay. Anything else in your life that you've had to practice many, many times, and to become good at it that you're proud of?
Yeah, podcasting.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about that. How it got easier the more times you did it. I mean, just give us a real brief history of your history in podcasting, and just how the practice helped you.
Sure. So I had to start doing videos for a direct sales company that I started working for as a side hustle when I was in a 9-to-5 type job. And I remember the videos were awful, like so bad, and I felt so uncomfortable. And then I was challenged to do them, every single day. And as I continued doing them, then I thought, oh, in my other job, I should do community interviews. So I started interviewing people in the community about the work that they were doing because I was working in not-for-profit world. And at first that felt a little strange. But then I got really into it and really interested in it. And I found it so amazing and fun. And then I was getting better and better and better. So when I was introduced into the podcasting world, I look back on those experiences and they have catalyst. They were the catalyst for that. And now I kind of crave the camera and crave getting my message out there. And I really crave the connection with other people. So, yeah, it started there and it just brought me here to this moment in time right now, I guess.
Okay. So here we have a pattern that was very positive in your life, and you practiced it over and over again. You got better at it. And then you started to feel more reward from it, which gave you even more motivation to do it. And but there's no replacement. There was no replacement for the practice, right? I mean, that was all part of it. Okay.
Replacement for the, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So just to divert just a moment here. That's kind of the secret of the brain and its ability to learn, change, adapt, and evolve is through repetition. So you've just cited two examples, one that's a very good pattern in your life, and one that, that we've been talking about that's not as helpful. And so both of them, you got practiced and quote unquote good at, meaning you got good at the pattern. Because you practice them over and over and over and over and over again. And so what's happening in those moments is we're developing connections in our brain with the 85 billion neurons that are in there, and they form them, they connect and form patterns based on these patterns that we're trying to learn and develop. And so the unhelpful pattern that you've talked about, that you've labeled the pressured over performer, has neurons that are connected to each other that are forming a pattern. It's like a root of a tree. The same thing with your podcasting pattern that you've now worked at, repeated, and developed. It's also formed a root in your brain, a neural pathway. And so that's how the brain develops these patterns, is through repetition and practice. Okay. So now I'd like to talk a little bit about this unhelpful pattern again. What is it now costing you, to have this pattern in your life when it does surface? Like what if you could quantify what it's costing you, or even qualify?
Just like unnecessary worry, anxiety, stress, that stress response and that costs me sleep and time and money, perhaps, peace of mind, and the
Energy.
ability, energy, yeah, the stress response and the ability to just relax.
Okay. And if we sat here a while longer, we could probably figure some more out. But you just outlined worry, anxiety, stress, sleep, time, peace, energy, inability to relax. If you were to try to quantify that in monetary terms, like how much would that arise to? What amount of money would that cost be?
Oh my God, $1 billion, a lot. Right? Like I just feel like having all of that go away would that would be like it seems like a lot because of the weight of it.
So close to priceless.
Yeah.
Okay. And so on the converse, what is it giving you? What is it providing for you? How is it serving you now, positively in any way?
I guess motivation, drive. Coffee does the same thing. Oh my God, that bad joke. So probably that, like the motivation and drive.
Okay. So do you feel like if you weren't pressured, do you feel like you would lose your motivation and drive if you weren't pressured?
No, it's but it's self pressure. It's pressure I'm putting on myself. So maybe not. Let's go back. Do I get motivation and drive from it? Guess I work, yeah, I guess so, because then I work more than I should to, to do these things. So, and it's because of the own pressure I'm putting on myself.
Okay, so when you say you work more than you should, who defines should?
Yeah, me.
Okay, so in one breath you're saying that you're motivated and driven to perform, but that's more than you should, because you when you work more than you should, you have these costs.
Yep.
So, can you conceive of a version of yourself that performed as much as she should and felt good about that, meaning her needs were satisfied in the area of significance, but she didn't have any of the costs?
Yeah. I can think of certain situations. I mean, I feel like I was hardwired in that way. In hindsight, I think, a lot of things possibly it's patterns, right? It's like working in the corporate world and leaving that to work on my own, the definition, all of these ways of defining, how to work, what's enough work. It's like relearning that stuff. Right. So what's
Okay.
enough? Why do I have to get up at 8 in the morning? Like if I haven't slept, like I don't need to do that, right? But it's this pressure of waking up and needing to do something to feel productive, right?
I understand. So, but do you feel like you could sit down and ponder and think about with all the things that you want in your life? All the ways that you want to feel, all the needs you have, and your desire to meet all of those, that you could construct a identity, series of patterns that would meet all those needs and not have the costs. Could you
Yeah.
visualize and construct that person on paper?
They feel on paper like words.
Well, do you feel like you could construct an identity for yourself, the way that you think, feel, and act, and all the things you do during the day, and how you spend your time, and just to construct a complete identity, a vision for yourself that would satisfy all of those needs, including significance, without any of the costs? I mean, do you think that that's possible to design that person?
I do.
Okay. And we just outlined that it's possible to learn patterns because you learned how to podcast. Wasn't easy at the beginning, but you stuck with it and ultimately found it incredibly enjoyable as you got better at it. And I would assume derived a lot of meaning and significance and other things that represent those six psychological needs, correct?
Absolutely.
And then you also, we just identified that you learned the unhelpful pattern of pressured overperformer through years and years of practice. So it's clear, well, is it clear to you that patterns can be learned?
Yeah, I'm really, really good at the other one because I did it for so many years. So it's like breaking that pattern, right? Like, getting to do it a new way. So I 100% get what you're saying, and I love that you just illustrated that. So for the audience to hear that we do things a certain way for so long that it just becomes how we think and feel, and it becomes second nature. But you know, that doesn't have to be the case. So what would you tell me next?
Well, what I would ask you is now that you've analyzed the benefits and the costs of either staying with the pattern or moving to a different one, how loyal do you still feel to this old pattern?
Yeah, I don't like it. I want to take it outside to the doghouse, definitely.
Take it to the woodshed, huh?
Yes, absolutely. It
So if
doesn't
you had a deer.
serve me.
If you had a dear friend who sat down with you and expressed the same issue that you're telling me about yourself, what would you tell her?
I would definitely tell her that that's really, really hard way to live, and that she was, you know, worth something by just being human, right? Like all those things. It's how I speak to other people, so it's quite ironic that it's such a problem for myself, right? So it's like identifying that you don't have to be somebody to be worth something, right? You don't have to work 24 hours to be significant. So I would just obviously I would tell her that she was great the way she was.
Do you think you could tell yourself that?
Yes, I definitely can.
And what do you think the pressured overperformer is afraid will happen if you ask it to step aside?
Perhaps I don't know. Well, I know 5 years ago I would have thought that my life would have fallen apart, you know, everything would have changed. So I would say from that aspect, going back to when it was like a real issue in my life, it would have been that I would have lost my job. I wouldn't have been able to pay my bills. People wouldn't see me as being someone that was, you know, intelligent and smart and just worthy, I guess.
And what does it need from you in order to give way to something else?
That's a new pattern. So it needs, right? Like, is that what you're asking me? What does it need to step aside to be actually put in the woodshed?
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, what?
So yeah, it needs me to like create new patterns.
Okay. And what would this different version look like in terms of how she feels, thinks, and acts?
Yeah, it would be a comfort, just a belief that like I'm doing the best I can, and that's good enough. So it just peace of mind. Yeah, just everything is as it should, and everything will work out.
Okay. And so what would you call that person? You've labeled the old pattern the pressured overperformer. So this new this new version, this new identity that you're beginning to ponder, what would we call her?
If you like Lisa 2.0.
Okay. But would she still perform, or would she still achieve, or is there kind of a label that you can put on her that represents how you would feel and act? So they're really elements of a way that we would feel as this person, a way that we might think as this person, or a way that we might act as this person.
Yeah,
So you.
the calm, energetic, You have any ideas?
Well, you still want
I
to
like
achieve, right? You like
the,
achieving and accomplishing things. Is that
I do.
important?
Yeah, so the calm, energetic achiever.
Okay. Very good. And so when you bump those two labels up next to each other and feel how you feel in each of those identities, so the pressured overperformer, you know what that feels like pretty well, I would assume. And when you feel what calm, energized achiever feels like, just spend a moment and just sink into that.
I can actually, when I said it, I felt it. The words made me feel it. So I feel just good, comfortable, like I'm just glowing. I'm natural. I'm normal. I guess not normal. That's a bad word for it. But yeah, it feels good.
Okay. And how would the calm, energetic achiever respond the next time the pressured overperformer begins to surface?
Calmly and energetic, and I'm just being a smart ass. well, no, I calmly tell it to take a hike, like tell it belongs in the woodshed.
Okay. So in doing so, would that require you to what? It would require you to be aware that it's coming up for you, and
Yeah,
like,
so
how would you?
I would need to identify the pattern, and then I would need to rethink my thoughts around it. So that level of self-awareness. So watch for it and then say, no, we're not doing this today. We're going to do it this way and start doing it a different way.
Okay. And how badly do you want this version, scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, I mean, a 10.
Okay. And you had indicated before that this transformation would be priceless. And if you can envision living the rest of your life as this version, no longer having this pressured overperformer pattern arise for you, would that be the way that you'd want to spend the rest of your life?
Absolutely.
Okay. So at this point, we're going to stop the session because there's another session that maybe we can do next time, which is starting to construct Lisa 2.0. By analyzing her values, her strengths, her traits. So really diagramming, envisioning, feeling what this new Lisa 2.0 is going to be from the ground up, building the foundation, like building a foundation of a house.
Right.
It's almost like, Jennifer Aniston, goes and does a roll call for a character and tries out, and she gets the script, and this character's been outlined for her, how that this character how she thinks, feels, acts, so on. And then Jennifer Aniston has to then put herself in the shoes of this character and become the character.
Right.
And so that's what we would be looking to do in our next session, is to create the character, Lisa 2.0, every aspect of her, and then begin to try her on for size. And then we're going to begin to act. You're going to begin to act her.
Right.
So you're going to become that character. And before you know it, as we design your life, your daily activities from the moment you wake up to go to sleep, and many of your current ones will be a part of this. But it may include things like not working as much, as other ways of seeing life, and so we would construct this new person, what they think, feel, and do, until we feel like it's forming an identity that is going to meet your needs in healthy ways, that meet all your needs. Your life is rich. You don't feel any mental friction. You don't feel any of these costs, worry, anxiety, stress, loss of sleep, loss of time, lack of peace, lack of energy, or low energy, no relaxation. So the identity that we would build for Lisa 2.0 would have none of these costs, and still enable her to be the achiever, but doing so in a calm, energetic way. And
I love
then
it.
Lisa 1.0 starts to practice being Lisa 2.0 day after day after day. And when Lisa 1.0 surfaces in a way that Lisa 2.0 is not happy with, in other words, a pattern presents itself that's no longer part of Lisa 2.0, then Lisa knows what to do to get herself back on track.
Right.
And then the way that you've learned about how patterns, the brain learns patterns, which is by repetition and time and reward, having them feel good. If you do this long enough, you will become Lisa 2.0. And there's never a light switch that goes off. There's never a single moment when you just cross over the line. It's a very gradual, steady, methodical process. And before you know it, I'd say 6 to 8 weeks, you are noticing significant differences in your state of being. So many people that I work with, by the time they hit 90 days, which is the length of time I typically work with people, they are well under the transformational process. They are knowing significant, there are knowing and experiencing significant improvements in their life, and they can begin to self-manage and self-direct their own mental experiences because they know enough about what's gotten them to that point. They know enough about the
Right.
process, how the brain works, okay, that they can begin to, when things arise that aren't helpful, they know what to do.
It was really helpful in to really pinpoint those patterns and have it redefined. So I like that aspect of things, and I see the significance of understanding the brain pattern. So do you see typically like the full transformation, and how do you leave your client after the 90 days? Is there a plan after? What's the absolute last step? Because I know next time we're going to build my Lisa 2.0, and then I'm going to embody that, and then what happens?
Well, bear in mind, we just spent an hour together, but I'm spending 90 days with people. And so there's a lot of education that goes into this where the person begins to understand, I have 12 education modules that are very rich, that they understand it, every aspect they need to understand about how the brain functions, how change occurs, all the elements of taking someone from where they are to where they want to go. We craft entirely new identities. We talk about why the brain needs reward from this new direction that we're heading, so that, because if the brain doesn't experience reward from it, has no interest in or no motivation in continuing to pursue it. And so, earlier in our conversation, you cited motivation and drive as to why you feel you want to feel you felt like the pressure was retaining motivation and drive. Well, what we're going to try to introduce is motivation and drive because, you're in a better state. In other words, you're still going to be able to achieve, but you're going to be able to do so calmly and energetically. Your brain is going to find that more rewarding, and your needs are going to be getting met in better, healthier ways. And so, your brain is going to want to pursue that more than it's going to want to pursue the old way of doing it. And so you're actually going to be getting more motivation from doing it the new way, not less. Okay. So yeah, again, it's not a light switch. It's a gradual process of understanding how the brain functions and understanding that once you've created this new identity, and if you stick to it and abide by it, stay fastidious with it, that over time, you're just going to notice gradual shifting. And before you know it, after 60, 90 days, you are well, transformed. You've become a significant percentage of the way the version of this person that you want to become. You're still going to have, one step back, two step forward, and you're still going to have to catch yourself where old patterns may resurface, may be triggered by stress, and you're going to have to be aware, stop, pause, analyze, observe, be objective, and respond instead of react. Because what happens is these old patterns are so ingrained to us, we just, if we don't pause and objectively view them, we just react because these patterns are so well ingrained in the back part of our brain. And so, you just have to trust in the process that by doing things over and over again, like you've done them in previously in your life, you're going to get better at them. This is no different. Creating a new version of yourself or tweaking a version of yourself that parts of it that are no longer helpful into something that is helpful is like learning any other skill. It's like learning a new language, learning a new instrument, learning how to be a podcaster, learning how to create a better mental life for yourself is just like every other one of those things. Just takes time and repetition.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for, working with me, illustrating for us what the first part of the process in working with you is, because you offer this as part of your coaching package to all of your co clients. So would you please tell us about your services, your website, and where we can find you?
Yeah, please see me on LinkedIn at George Haymaker, HayMaker. Please follow me. Lots of great content there. Visit my website. You can sign up for a free newsletter, free brain hacks on the insight page of my website. You can also schedule a free discovery call for us to chat and talk about what's going on in your life and see if we're a good fit to work together. There's links on every page to schedule that free discovery call.
Amazing. Well, it was a lot of fun diagnosing my perfectionism. So I appreciate session one. And I hope our listeners got a lot from that. And I think that they will, because I think a lot of people struggle with these patterns, And so thank you so much again for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Lisa. And thanks for being a
No
good
problem.
sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I really look forward to next time. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in. If you are struggling with a mental health issue and it feels overwhelming, please do not hesitate to, contact your local hospitals and any place where you could get some real help. If you're struggling with a pattern that you want to break, please reach out to George because he has a lot of experience in this avenue. And next time we're going to break down Lisa 2.0. So stay tuned for that. Until next time, my name is Lisa Urbanski with The Advisor, and you just heard from George Haymaker. Bye for now.